702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
Yes TV Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, the Electoral Court dismisses the ANC's application to have the MK Party deregistered. The Speaker of Parliament faces removal in a motion of no confidence. The results of the non-financial census of municipalities are being released. We'll explain the raids on P. Diddy's homes amidst claims of a sex trafficking ring. And Bafana face Algeria tonight. We'll preview that. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 in Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Good to be with you today. We'll break down the results of the non-financial census of municipalities. Very, very interesting data being released by the Statistician General. I think the bit that is probably going to get people talking the most is around immigrants and employment. In 2012, the unemployment rate among immigrants was 15.6%. That rate has increased to 18.4% in 2017 and then rose to 18.2% by 2022. So they look at the absorption rate, they look at the fact that most immigrants are employed in private households, followed by construction and then wholesale and retail trade, other data as well. We'll speak to the Statistician General. And then Tswane, some news for you, and that is that your mayor, Sliers Brink, plans on staying on as mayor. He's not going to parliament. He says he wants to finish what we started as a coalition, restore the finances, build energy, independence, and improve services in the face of cadres, tenderpreneurs, and everyone else who would prefer Joburg-like leadership in Tswane. What are your thoughts on that? Send me a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, if you want to let me know what you think about Sliers Brink staying on as the mayor of Tswane. Well, let's start with the court judgment today by the Electoral Court sitting in the Gauteng High Court. It dismissed the ANC's application to have former President Jacob Zuma's Umkhonto or Sizwe party deregistered. The MKP's registration application, if you remember this, of course, was approved by the IEC late last year. And a unanimous decision handed down in the Electoral Court today. Let's speak to Tabiso Goba, EWN reporter, about that decision. Tabiso, good afternoon to you. What were the reasons given by Judge Lebogang Modiba in handing down that judgment today?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, I think, you know, Mandy, a bit of background is that, you know, when the Umkhonto Sizwe approached the IEC saying that, you know, it wants to register as a political party. It handed in an application. The IEC initially had some issues with the signatures that appeared on the MK party's application. So the IEC said, you know, go back and sort this out. So then that's literally where the basis of the ANC's application came about, saying that, you know, the IEC should not have told the MK party to actually go back and sort this out, and that the MK party should have made a fresh application. However, the IEC said that, you know, what we did was in line with, you know, with the Electoral Act. And this has also been confirmed, Mandy, by today's court rulings. With the Electoral Court Judge, Lebogang Modiba, saying that there are, you know, avenues for any political party or any person to actually object to political parties being registered. And those avenues, Mandy, when they were on the 9th of June and the 30th of June. So between the 9th of June and the 30th of June, the ANC had an opportunity, this was last year, the ANC had an opportunity to lodge formal complaints, but the ANC didn't do that. And the Electoral Court saying that, you know, you had this chance to do this, but you didn't. And now you're bringing in an application, and this application is not urgent. And the Electoral Court also mentioning, Mandy, that if the ANC were to win this case, there would have been no chance for the MK party to actually go back and register and actually participate in the upcoming election. So the Electoral Court saying that this would not have been in the interest of justice if it ruled on the side of the ANC. Now, Mandy, we did speak to the founder of the NK Party, Jabulani Khumalo, just outside court to get his reaction to the ruling. And basically he said, Mandy, that the ANC feels threatened by the NK Party. That's why they're trying to destroy it. Let's take a listen.
Well, ANC will do anything because they know it's their last chance to stand in the government. They know they're out of government, so they will try by all means to disturb the MK, but we are not going to follow their problems. They must go and sort out themselves. We'll go on the ground, and we are going to make sure that we win the case tomorrow and we get the two-third majority on the 29th.
So that's the reaction from the MK party. The ANC has also been responding, saying they never wanted the MK party off the ballot paper. What are they saying about this?
Yes, Mandy, the ANC has released a statement. I do have to mention that the ANC initially planned a media briefing for 1 p.m. today, but they've cancelled it and instead released a statement saying that, firstly, that they do accept the court's judgment and they are going to comply with it. Saying that, Mandy, that their contention with the MK party is not due to obviously the fact that its former president Jacob Zuma is now part of it, or that, you know, some members of the ANC are now part of it, saying that this court application was they made it in the interest of law and democracy, saying that they believed that the NK party was not registered properly. So that's why they made this application. Now, you know, Mandy, that tomorrow there is another ANC application. Now, this one deals with the logo and trademark of the Umkhonto Wesizwe. This will be heard in Durban. So the ANC is saying that, you know, this is its objection to the MK party is based on principles and not exactly on individuals.
Tabiso, thank you very much. Tabiso Gorba, EWN reporter. As you could hear there, outside court, it resembled a political rally today because, of course, so much at stake for political parties. So what does this judgment actually mean? Let's speak now to Terry Tselane, who's the executive chairperson of the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa. Terry, thanks for your time. What is your reading of this judgment today, the unanimous decision, and what does it actually mean for the MK party in terms of being able to participate in this election?
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to your listeners. I think the submission of the ANC firstly appears to be uncoordinated and not really thought through properly. Because, as you will recall, that there were two issues that were raised. The first issue that was raised with the commission was that they were contesting the trademark and the logos, and saying that the logo of the NK looked much more similar to theirs. The commission obviously dismissed that. And then immediately after that, when they went to the electoral court, they completely abandoned that argument about the trademark and the ownership of NK, and raised procedural issues. And then obviously now the judges dismissed also those procedural issues and say that basically the modalities of how to get information, it is to the discretion of the commission to do so. Now, this obviously now allows the NK to proceed with its preparations for the elections and also for the commission to focus on its preparations for the elections to make sure that we can have a smooth election.
Terry, is this all just semantics or politicking? Is there any real merit in the ANC's concerns?
Frankly speaking, as I've indicated, the submission looked very rushed and uncoordinated because, as you recall, when the Secretary General of the ANC was in Bloemfontein, the issues that he was raising was around the ownership and the trademark. When in actual fact, in the papers that were submitted to the electoral court, there was not even a single mention of that particular aspect. The issues were more around the procedure that was followed in terms of the registration of MK. So I suspect that the intention was to make sure that, MK does not participate in this process, and that there is a way of making sure that they go through a particular process of registration and miss the opportunity to participate in the current elections. So it was not really just a matter of semantics. It was an issue that was critical in terms of preparation for these elections.
Terry, thank you very much for your analysis. Terry Tselane speaking to us there, the executive chairperson of the IEMSA. And a statement just out from the IEC saying that the Electoral Commission has published the lists of candidates for inspection and objections. So today marks yet another milestone in the candidate nomination process. Parties intending to contest the elections had until 5 o'clock to revise their lists and inform the Commission of their nominated candidates, who also appeared on the list of another party or who are nominated as independent candidates. In all, there were 42 candidates appearing on more than one party list, implicating 39 parties. How does that happen? 42 people appeared on more than one party list. Furthermore, one candidate was nominated as an independent and also appeared on a list of a party. That's amazing that that's even possible. Well, let me know your thoughts on that, that judgment. Do you think that the ANC is distracted by the MK party, or do you think there is merit in these various court applications?
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
If you were watching court yesterday, you would have seen the lawyers for the National Assembly Speaker, Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula, arguing that her arrest should not be happening. She's been given a week reprieve and judgment will be handed down next week. But there are developments in the story, and that's because the National Assembly Deputy Speaker, who is now the Acting Speaker, Lechesa Tsinoli, has agreed to the DA's request for a motion of no confidence to be debated against the Speaker. So she does stand the pot. There is the possibility that she could actually be removed in a motion of no confidence. Lindsay Dentlinger, EWN reporter, joining us now. Lindsay, good afternoon to you. What is the response from Tsinoli? What is he saying about this motion?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, he really has to just follow the rules of the House, Mandy. He can't really use his discretion as to whether to allow this or not. And apart from some small technicalities, he says the motion as submitted by the DA meets the House rules. It meets the provisions of the Constitution for removing a Speaker from office. And for that reason, he will allow that motion be put on the order paper for the business of Parliament. But the real question is going to come down to when that will be. He has not put a date to it. He says this has got to happen in consultation with the ANC's chief whip, Pemmi Majidina, and I'm sure she is going to want to end her term as the only ANC chief whip to serve a full 5 years without having to deal with this matter. So I think Parliament would want to end their business on Thursday, as is currently the case. But I'm sure we are going to see some wrangling behind the scenes in terms of calling the House back after the Easter holidays to deal with this matter.
Pemmi Majidina, who also made the comments that, well, everybody gets raided occasionally. How do we expect the ANC to come out in defence of the Speaker? Is there any indication from them? Is it too early to say whether they'll be closing ranks?
I think it's too early to say, but if the past is anything to go by, we do have instances where we do see that they close ranks. We saw this in the impeachment vote against President Cyril Ramaphosa, despite an impeachment panel saying there was enough evidence for him to face an inquiry. And in this particular case, it would appear on the face of it that the Speaker does have a criminal case to answer for. And so it will really come down to the ANC and what they do. I mean, I don't see them voting against her and supporting, firstly, a motion of another party for her to remove herself. And then, as you say, they generally close ranks. But to do so, and presumably if this vote does go ahead, it would be after whatever next week's court proceedings are. And if the court should find that there is a basis for her to be arrested, how would that then look for the DA MPs then to rally around the Speaker and vote for her not to be removed? Because at the end of the day, it is going to come down to the numbers. No matter how many opposition parties the DA manages to lobby in support of their motion, they just do not have the numbers to succeed. And incidentally, just over a year ago, if I remember correctly, it was the 22nd of March last year, the Speaker faced her first motion of no confidence. Very different circumstances, of course. The EFF wanted her gone because they said she was treating them unfairly in these many instances where she has been removed from the House. So this will not be the first time she faces a motion of no confidence, but the circumstances much more grave and will, in a political environment like now, never more so than before, will it then come down to how the ANC then treats this motion.
Lindsay, thank you very much. Lindsay Dentlinger, EWN, a parliamentary reporter on that one. It's going to be interesting. The timeline, as Lindsay says, will be crucial, right? So if the court rules next week that the arrest can go ahead, and the arrest does go ahead, and the criminal charges, how does the ANC then rally around the Speaker? How do they come out in defence of the Speaker, or do they choose to just not do that? I can't see that happening. What are your thoughts? How do you expect the ANC to handle this one?
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Well, that, of course, is a motion by the Democratic Alliance. The Democratic Alliance also saying that it wants the Department of International Relations to open more voting stations overseas. They've been banging this drum for a while, saying that there just simply are not enough voting stations abroad. And that move, of course, in response to complaints from South Africans, specifically in Perth, who have sought the opening of the honorary consulate as a voting facility. Khumotso Modise is looking at the story for us. Khumotso, good afternoon to you. What does the DA want to see happening here?
Well, Mandy, we've been hearing arguments from the DA's lawyers who are basically calling for what we call honorary consulates, which are basically mini consulates in the different countries, to also be allowed to host or to allow people to come and cast their votes. The DA says, as it stands, the IEC has failed to make any submissions that prove or show that it would be impossible to set up these voting stations there. Of course, we are about to hear the IEC's submissions. However, we understand that the IEC does say that in terms of Section 33 of the Electoral Act, they're not obliged to run these voting stations at honorary consulates, maybe. And so the DA wants this court to declare that Section 33 doesn't include honorary consulates, but they also do say that they understand that it might not be practical to have a voting station at every single honorary consulate in all the countries. But they want this court to rule that the IEC should commit to trying to set up voting facilities in those honorary consulates in places like Perth.
Who are the respondents in this matter? Just the IEC or DIRCO, or who else is expected to argue?
It's both the IEC and DIRCO, primarily the IEC, Mandy. But because DIRCO did endorse this decision by the IEC, the DA does also address DIRCO in their head.
Okay, we'll be watching that one. Khumotso, thank you very much for that update. Following that legal process, the DA is arguing for more voting stations abroad.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Good show as always. Can you please help me out? I often hear you, especially in court judgments, the unanimous decision. What does it mean? Do judges vote, or does one judge decide, or do they get advice? What does unanimous decision mean? Yeah, in just simple terms. Thank you, Sviso.
Hey, Sviso. So unanimous means that the judges agree. So they'll deliberate if there's more than one judge hearing a matter. They'll deliberate. There could be a majority judgment. There could be a minority judgment where some of the judges agree, but not all of them. So, for example, on the Constitutional Court, they need a majority of judges, and then one person will write the judgment. So on the Electoral Court, the Electoral Court consists of a judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal, who's the chairman, and then there are two High Court judges, and then there are usually two other members who are appointed by the president on the advice of the Judicial Service Commission. So if it's unanimous, it means that all the judges agree, and then usually one judge will write the judgment and that judge will then deliver the judgment. I am no lawyer, for clarity, disclaimer, but that would be the explanation of what a unanimous judgment means.
Hi, Mandy. I was just wondering, what is the point of all these court cases and arresting these people? Because Dudu Mnyeni is still out. Zuma is still out. Now there's this next, the Speaker of the House. Nothing happens with these charges. Nobody goes to jail. There are no consequences. So what is actually the point of all of this? What do South African people have to do to get these criminals off our streets and out of our parliaments?
Hi, Mandy. These candidates that are appearing on the list of multiple parties and even appearing as independent candidates, Mandy, what are the chances of such people serving the needs of the people? Mandy, they are there for selfish reasons. Not a slight chance that you can do that and serve the people. And I wish that in future some law can be put in place to eventually prosecute such people, because that's how you prevent corruption in its grassroots. This is Ben. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Ben, I agree with you. Unfortunately, we do see this culture in South Africa of politicians seeking election because it's a form of employment. It's sheltered employment in many ways, and they're not doing it for the right reasons. Unfortunately, I've made this point before that we don't have the people pursuing careers in politics because they want to actually serve the people. On the issue of the prosecutions, at the risk of coming under attack like I was yesterday for defending the NPA, I do think that the only way the NPA will get the confidence of the public is if there is a high profile conviction. Unfortunately, what we're seeing in this case of Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula is that this is Stalingrad again. And the same as Dudu Mnyeni, the same as Jacob Zuma, it's an abuse of the court system to Stalingrad and defend. And I think that is the real challenge for the NPA here, that it's doing its very, very best, or trying at least, to try and get people behind bars.
And now it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 7:02.
Let's walk the talk.
12:35 on the Midday Report. Well, some progress because there's often lots of concern, as you've heard, around progress when it comes to state capture cases and other criminal cases. The Special Tribunal has ordered software giant SAP to pay 500 million rand to the Special Investigating Unit within 7 days. And this is to do with contracts at Eskom, according to the SIU. This relates to two contracts that SAP was involved in with Eskom from 2013 to 2016. So let's unpack this further with Kaiser Khanyahu, who is the SIU spokesperson. Kaiser, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. What is your reaction to this decision by the Special Tribunal? And also, can you just unpack what exactly it relates to?
Obviously, thank you very much, and thank you to your listeners. Obviously, we are delighted because this is a matter that has been dragging for quite some time. And what really happened was that SAP entered into a contract with Eskom many years ago. And then when we did the investigation, we found that it was irregularly entered into, but it was also, there was a process of paying bribes to a company that is linked to the Guptas that was involved in this particular transaction. Therefore, we then showed that to them, and then ultimately they said, okay, let us settle. And they came and said, no, we'll give you 100 million, because the contract was almost 1.1 billion. We'll give you 100 million. And we said no. And we worked on the figures, and ultimately they agreed to 500 million, which is basically half of what the contract was. The rest of the money is for the cost that they would have incurred with the licenses and all of those things that were involved. And that is why this now, when it was made an order of court, it was something that we would be happy about, and that money can go back to Eskom.
But to be clear, this doesn't absolve SAP of any prosecution or possible criminal charges, right?
No, this is just a recovery. What we were doing here is we took the matter to the tribunal earlier, and then the contract was set aside. And therefore, they can now not benefit from an unlawful contract. Therefore, anything that they would have made over and above the expenses, we took it back so that it can be given back to Eskom. They are not absorbed from any prosecution. They will, if they prosecute, we have already made referrals for prosecution to the NPA. We have also made referrals to the people that were involved at Eskom so that they be disciplined.
And Kaiser, for clarity, this 500 million rand, where does it go to when it gets paid back?
It goes back to ESCOM, where, as you might have seen on the order itself, the order says they must pay that money within 7 days to the SIU, and then we then put it in our trust fund, and then at a later stage give it to ESCOM to use for other things.
And lastly, Kaiser, how significant is this to get an order like this in terms of the fight back and clawing back the money that was taken from the state during that state capture era?
It is significant in two reasons. One is that we are gradually getting traction in getting back the money that was taken illegally. But secondly, it sends a message to multinationals to say they shouldn't think outside of the country, they are in Germany or anywhere else. They can just come into the country and do as they wish. Therefore, this notion that we are only going after black owned companies is not correct. Anyone who has done anything wrong, we will go after them and make sure that that money is brought back to the fiscus.
Kaiser, thank you very much. Kaiser Ganyahu is the SIU spokesperson, explaining there that decision by the special tribunal ordering the software company SAP to pay 500 million rand to the SIU. It does go back to ESCOM because it's related to two contracts that SAP was engaged in with ESCOM from 2013 to 2016.
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Being released today by Statistics South Africa are the results of the non-financial census of municipalities for 2022. And this is really interesting because it drills down into some data around specifically immigrants and employment, but also in terms of municipalities and service delivery. Let's understand firstly exactly what it is. Rusenga Maluleke is the Statistician General. Statistician General, good afternoon to you as always. Thank you very much for your time.
Mandy, let me greet you and greet the 702 listeners.
So before we get into the actual data, Statistician General, explain to us what the non-financial census of municipalities actually looks at.
The non-financial census of municipalities looks at services that municipalities are providing. It doesn't look at the audited financial statements and the expenses that they are making in different areas, be it human resources or capital investments.
Okay, so one of the important issues that you drill down into that have been highlighted is around immigrants. So you look at the unemployment rate amongst immigrants, you look at where immigrants are employed. Speak us through that data.
Let us look at it this way. It's unlike the quarterly labor force survey where we talk about employment, unemployment, which we collect from households. Here we collect information only from the supply side of what the municipalities are saying. So let us start. We talk more about services rather than employment, but we do capture a section of employment on the staff members that they have without looking at whether they're immigrants or not, as well as the mayors and executive mayors, if they are increasing in terms of the number of women that are there. So let us look at the main issues that we found was that all services, be it water, free basic water, electricity, free basic electricity, sewer and sanitation services, as well as solid waste management, which has to do with refuse removals. We have seen them increasing between 2021 and 2022. Mandy, when we say they were increasing, we are not talking about the number of people that were serviced or the number of households. We are talking about consumer units. So what is a consumer unit? You could have a tap in the village that supplies about 4, 5, or even 10 or 12 households. And you could have the number of people that benefit from that tap being 120. So we look at that tap as a consumer unit. Same as a meter in Soweto, Mamelodi, or Atteridgeville, which may have back rooms, but it's supplying electricity. And we are not talking about the quality of services that the people are getting, because to measure the quality from the municipalities would not be give us a good indicator. Quality, we get it from members of the public through our household surveys, like your general household survey. So all services have increased. What we have seen is the decrease in the number of people, consumer units that said they were using bucket toilets. The consumer units were 46,753 in 2021. They've gone to 45,779. So that's the only thing that we have seen going down. In terms of employment, we have seen that the majority of mayors and executive mayors in the country are largely male in the country. So we are talking about only about 37% 32% nationally of mayors and executive mayors that are female. 68% are male. The highest number of females, which are 50% and above, we find them in the Eastern Cape and the Northwest. The lowest is in KwaZulu-Natal. Females only account for 13% of mayors and executive mayors.
That's such an interesting stat. You would think that there would be more females because, you know, women get things done. What other kind of data are you able to extract from this census that has painted a particular picture?
Well, one of the things that we do pick up is the issue of indigence in terms of the number of indigents that are registered. So we are saying that there are about 2.6 million indigent households that we have seen, and that has gone up a bit from where we were in 2021. In 2021, there were 2.58 million households that registered as indigents with their municipalities nationally. As of 2022, they rose a bit to about 2.6 million. And the majority of them are in KwaZulu-Natal. KwaZulu-Natal accounts for 28%, 28.2%, which is about 739,000, followed by Gauteng, which is about 460,000. The lesser number is in the Northern Cape, only 72,000. Having said so, one of the things that we have seen, even with indigents, is that the number of people who have registered in KwaZulu-Natal, while nationally KwaZulu-Natal accounts for 28%, but within the population of KwaZulu-Natal, that accounts for about 25.9%. But indigents, remember, municipalities supply services, and especially free basic services, on three categories, four categories. And these categories, Mandy, are largely in the area of technical. So they could come and say, to qualify for 50 kilowatts of free basic electricity or 6 kiloliters of free basic water, they could use what they call a broad-based approach, which says all households benefit and they receive in a particular area, or technical, where they use technology to say once they go beyond this point and you are at this salary level, you go out, or geographical, where they say if you stay in this area in our municipality, say a rural area, you benefit. So you could have someone earning higher. But in terms of indigence, it's self-targeting. It's people who go and register themselves. Municipalities don't go to them. They have to go and register themselves.
Statistician General, as always, thank you very much for explaining all of that. Rusenga Maluleke, the Statistician General, speaking to us there about the non-financial census of municipalities from 2022 and that data that has been drawn.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
12:49 on the Midday Report with me, Mandy Wiener. Jackie Pamotse, the controversial author, sentencing due to be handed down in the Randburg Magistrates Court today. That court expected to sentence her for the criminal defamation, criminal injuria and contempt charges she was convicted of. All of this, of course, relating to comments that she made about Basitsana Khumalo and Romeo Khumalo as well. Bernadette Wicks, EWN reporter, following this case for us. Bernadette, good afternoon to you. Has sentencing been handed down?
Not yet. We have heard closing arguments on sentencing this morning, and we are expecting a ruling from the court at around 2 o'clock this afternoon.
And what are we expecting around this? Because, of course, she was convicted, right, last year on those charges. So what kind of sentence could we be anticipating?
Yeah, so the state is pushing quite hard for her to be sentenced to direct imprisonment. They talk about sort of this matter being not just about the Kumalos, but about sort of social media keyboard warriors, in inverted commas, in general, and especially the impact that these kind of cyberbullying has on children and on teenagers. And they've spoken to kind of suicide rates as a result of cyberbullying. And they really want the court to send a strong message. In Jackie Promotio's case, the other issue is that they argue quite strongly that she's shown no remorse. Now, you'll remember she published her book, I Tweet What I Like, So Sue Me. That was published after she'd been slapped with a harassment order. And she's been found guilty of contempt of court over that book. And what they say is that even after she was charged, even after this harassment order was issued against her, she continued effectively to perpetrate the crime. And even the probation officer who actually testified earlier this month and suggested that she be fined in order to issue a public apology had to concede that, in her opinion, there was no remorse and Pomotse hadn't taken any sort of responsibility for the crime. Of course, her legal team is asking for a non-custodial sentence. They're even kind of hesitant to accept a fine. They say that she's struggling a lot financially in the wake of this a somewhat curious approach that they've taken. They kind of say, you know, she's been cyberbullied as a result of this case, and after she was charged, she suffered with work prospects, and she's lost out on all these opportunities, and she's in fact suffered as well as a result of this case. I mean, the obvious rebuttal to that is this is all of her own doing. So we'll see what the court decides, but I do think that the state has a strong case for direct imprisonment at this stage.
Bernadette, thank you very much. Bernadette Wicks, EWN reporter, following that case for us. We are expecting sentencing there, and of course a decision there on whether or not there will be direct imprisonment for Jackie Pomotse.
702
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
So you may have woken up this morning to big entertainment and policing news, because P. Diddy's homes were being raided by U.S. federal agents. There are sex trafficking claims, sex assault lawsuits as well. Sean Diddy Combs being raided by federal agents. Reports that his sons, Justin and King, had been arrested as well. Then there were reports about a jet leaving the country. Kamagwini Mavovana, the executive producer of this show, who gives us updates on popular culture in studio to explain this to us. So, Kama, did this come as a surprise? Why are P. Diddy's homes being raided?
Girl, it's messy. Let's just start there. It's a mess, okay? So, last year, Cassie, who is a popular singer, songwriter, came out and said, P. Diddy sexually assaulted me, he trafficked me, and he has sexually, like, basically laid claims that she was sexually assaulted and trafficked by P. Diddy. This opened a can of worms, and now more people have come to the forefront to say, me too. Me too. And Homeland Security today went to P. Diddy's homes, and they said, we are here because of sexual trafficking allegations, and they're searching everything. They're raiding everything, Mandy. Everything.
So there are some suggestions. This is Jeffrey Epstein 2.0, but bigger.
It gives me bigger, but also it gives me Russell Simmons vibes. It's actually quite interesting, Mandy, because yesterday, Russell Simmons was also given papers, because he's been hiding out in Bali. So he's also been given out given papers
and
to appear.
Just remind people who Russell Simmons is.
He's also a hip-hop mogul. He's also quite famous. He has made so many popular hip-hop artists. So in the same lane as Sean Diddy Combs, P. Diddy. And he's also been served papers to come back to America to actually face his crimes. So I would definitely say on that level of Jerry Epstein. But Mandy, it's really getting more hectic, and yeah.
So where is P. Diddy right now? Because there are reports about a jet and him leaving the country or the US. Where is he?
So people on Twitter are saying that he has fled the country. He's on some island at the moment. But there are also reports from TMZ saying that he's still in the country. There's a video right now on Twitter where he's pacing up and down and walking and talking to himself. And he looks quite crazy. So people are saying that he might be on the jet. Other people are saying that he still might be in the US. But it doesn't look good for him, Andy, at all.
And other people are being implicated as well.
Yes, definitely.
Big names.
Big names are being implicated, but he doesn't want to apparently come out with those names, which is why he's fleeing the country at the moment. So I just think that it's the downfall of PDD, and it's a long time coming. I'm excited, Mandy, because justice delayed, not justice denied, and I think that all those victims really need to deserve justice after so many years.
Kamagwini Mabovana, the producer of the show, explaining to us what's happening in this matter involving P. Diddy, Sean Diddy Combs.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Well, let's give you a quick preview of tonight's Bafana Bafana game against Algeria. Tipang Malawane, senior reporter at Sokola Duma, joining us to speak about that. Tipang, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. What are we expecting in this game? It's a friendly tonight against Algeria, but what are your expectations?
Good afternoon, Mandy, and good afternoon to your listeners. It's a friendly game, but it's also an opportunity to bounce back from that sort of disappointing display against Andorra. I think a lot of us expected a bit more from the national team going into the game against Andorra. But obviously, these are the friendly games where the coach has an opportunity to look at new players, give them opportunities. So it's not like a competitive game with a World Cup qualifier or an AFCON game. But obviously, we can't take them lightly. So going into this game against Algeria, it's important that, you know, give a good performance, because the World Cup qualifiers are coming up later this year. And this is an opportunity for the coach to look at these players who he maybe can add into the squad in case there are injuries, in case there are certain players who are not available, because the bigger the pool of players you have, you know, it makes it easier for you to, you know, bring in certain players in certain positions that can help the team whenever the ones that we know are not there.
Lots of rumours swirling around Hugo Broos, the coach, suggestions that maybe he's dumping Bafana Bafana. How important is this game, and what he's saying in terms of his commitment to the team?
I'm sure it's unsettling, especially for the players in the team, because this is a man who's helped us, you know, get to where we are today. And, you know, we talk proudly of the national team, unlike before, because of what we achieved at AFCON, and I felt that it's so important to have him in the national team, to continue with him as coach, you know, for continuity, because you don't want many changes in the national team, especially when things are going well, because when someone new comes in, what does that mean? It means that we have to start from scratch, because whoever comes in maybe comes in with his own philosophy, his own way of doing things, and that means we keep rebuilding and rebuilding, and that's my hope. So I hope Safa working tirelessly behind the scenes to sort of find out, one, what's happening. Is this true that, you know, he's going to Tunisia? They're very interested in him. And just to make sure that they keep him, you know, find a way to convince him if indeed he is interested in leaving, or he is looking at the possibility of joining them, because, you know, you have to entice him, give him reason to stay, because he's done so well for us. And, you know, we need him, actually. We need him more than he needs us at this moment, to be honest.
Tipang, thank you so much for your analysis. Tipang Malawane speaking to us there, previewing that game. Tipang, of course, a senior reporter at Sokola Duma. Bafana Bafana taking on Algeria this evening.
The Midday Report.
Listen, if you're a regular listener to this show, you'll know that we like to cover everything here on the Midday Report. It's like a lunchbox. So we do politics and serious news and sport and weather. And we speak about popular culture. Lesego, I see your shade here. Mandy, I didn't see you as one of us. Kantile wena orata ditaba. P. Diddy, Mandy, I just lost what little confidence I had in you. Now tell us more. Is he in the Cape Verde or what? Pella, you know us, Borango, Rinozi, shame. We nosy. We like to gossip as well. We speak about facts, but we like to gossip as well. Everything on the Midday Report.